So guys, I have to confess something to you. Actually, I had much more failed and challenged projects in my entire career than successful ones. This is the guy starting a presentation about agile software development. So actually, neither me nor my team did admit that we failed many, many times because we were seeking for the success so relentlessly. We couldn't deliver the right product in the right time with the right features, and we always or almost always went out of time and cost boundaries. But about 5 years ago, it happened that I turned to agile software methodologies. And actually, that moment changed my life. Right now, I think totally differently about products, projects, success, failure, and altogether software development. Today, here I am to whet your appetite about agile software frameworks, agile software development frameworks and methodologies, but most of all about agile values. I'm István Novák, Visual Studio and Developer MVP, and in Hungary I work as an agile coach and agile architect. In my free time, I write technology books, mainly about web technologies, and one of my favorite hobbies are long-distance running and scuba diving. I would like to tell you a few housekeeping instructions. Anytime, if you want, you can interrupt me. Those two ladies have a mic. Please take the mic and raise your hand, and then I know that you are ready for asking a question. Okay. So what we are dealing with today? Actually, all of us knows that we have something wrong with software development. We have a lot of backgrounds of failure, so I start with this. After that, I tell you a few things about agile misconcepts. Then I introduce you the two most important things in agile software development and in any kind of agile development. These concepts are the lean and the flow. And after that, I tell you one tool, which is my favorite, how to turn an evil and wrong specification into usable backlog. So let's start. What do you think? Why do we fail so often?
We don't want what we want.
We don't know what we want, yes? Other ideas?
We don't know what we will want a year from now.
Yes, or something like that.
We don't know, we don't know what line.
Yeah, so actually, when we start...
We have a bad plan.
Yeah, when we start making requirement specification, generally, our assumptions are that actually we know what our stakeholders want. That's one mistake. The second is that things are changing only slightly. As you guess, I will show you that these are not true. These are assumptions, but still we assume this. The first thing we should deal is a concept of half period time of business requirements. Just like as atoms have something like half period time, business requirements have the same. It means a time period while actually at least the 50% of requirements go obsolete or they go invalid. In 2012, the University of Kansas in Missouri made a survey. Actually, it was a research. And they collected into a graph how this half period time changed during the times. While in 1980, it was something like 6 years, you see, while with Arimosis. At the beginning of 2000, it was something like 3 years. Actually, the research was taken in 2012, and it showed that in 2011, this half period time was something like 6 months. What's your guess? What can this time be today in 2016?
6 days,
yeah. Hopefully a bit more. If it's 6 days, then we are in a big trouble, but it's a bit more. Well, it's not official. It's just our estimation with our colleagues. What does it mean? It means that if I have a project with requirements and the project is longer than 3 months, it means that at least half of the requirements go invalid or go wrong. So I'm in a big trouble. So that's one thing. There's another important thing I would like to show you as a background of failure that you may know as the iron triangle of project management. We do specifications. the great requirement analysis and a lot of plans before we start designing our software. Why? Because we assume, because we assume that we have a scope and we think that scope is fixed. According to the scope, we estimate costs and estimate deadlines. Somehow, we don't meet these costs and deadlines, yes? And what we always do, we assume that the quality is fixed because we know all the requirements, not just the functional requirements, but also the quality requirements too. But life is different. We have technical issues. We may miscommunicate with our customers, or we just simply misunderstand what our customers and what our stakeholders want. So what happens? Actually, we take the easy way. Because the scope is fixed, because the scope is fixed and the cost and deadline is estimated, actually we spare all those activities that help the quality keep deliver what we want to deliver. So actually the over quality is going to fall down. And that's a big issue, because if the quality reaches a certain level, it goes below a certain level, actually our product is unusable. So these are the two most important things why our software product doesn't work. And there's a third one, it comes from us. We tend to over-specify. Why do we do that? All of you know that if we have some kind of failure, some kind of mistake, it takes, let's say, $1 at the phase of analysis. If you are in the design phase, maybe it takes 5. During development, it takes 10 or 20. After, during the test, it's 50 or something like that. So actually, these costs go up exponentially, the cost of failures. As a mechanism for self-defension, we try to overestimate, we try to make good required specifications so that we have everything in advance, just right at the beginning. And we think that it has. Well, actually, it does not. So that's what we assumed, that we know what the stakeholders want, and these requirements stayed constant or stable. But actually, as all of us always say, sometimes even the stakeholder doesn't know what he wants. It's true. And actually, if you read after decision theory, it's natural, because decision theory says that it really matters in which order we get known the requirements. If it happened that we knew the requirements in a different order, then our final decision will be different. So it's actually that we try to solve an impossible thing when we think that we can specify everything. And you saw on the graph that these business requirements get obsolete quickly. You may wonder why I put this title here, What Agility Is Not. I hope I can say at the end of this presentation what agility is. There are many, many, many misconceptions and misbeliefs about what agility is. The everything is generally started when the people say about the Agile Manifesto. I don't want to read all those things, but those guys who created this Agile Manifesto in 2001, in February, they were 17, they said that why there are volumes on the items on the right, then they value the items on the left more. So actually, they said what they prefer, how they prefer to work together, how they prefer to create software. Most of the people and most of the project managers see this. And this is really bad, because this is the place, this is the origin of our misconceptions and disbeliefs of agile programming comes from. Because they think that we don't respect processes and tools, that they say that we don't have to document those things, we don't have to take care with the contract and so on. Guys, please, if you think so, then do that. And please don't develop software or not in the agile way. Let's talk about two very, very important things that starts put you into the context of agility, to lean on the flow. The whole thing started somewhere in 1948 with Toyota. You may know that Toyota was one of the most profitable car manufacturer company in the world. In 2001, they had much more profit alone than all the big car manufacturers together in the world. Why? Because they do something very special thing. They do making all wheels what adds value to the project, to the product, and they taken everything into account as a waste. Let me tell you an example. If they're manufacturing a wheel, it's a great thing because if you have four wheels on the car, it's a great something. But for Toyota, wheel doesn't have any value. Actually, it's a waste. A wheel becomes a value when you have a car with four wheels assembled to the car. Do you understand the difference? So if I have something that actually helps the product to work on the way I expect, then it's a value. If it doesn't, it's some kind of inventory, it's some kind of waste. And that's the main idea behind the whole agile approach. Let's see what kind of volumes and waste we have. The interesting things on this slide is that these ideas doesn't come from the software industry. They come from manufacturing, they come from project management, they come from every kind of the industry where we can work in an agile manner. So actually we identify only three kind of volumes. The first is the focus on the problem. We want to create a product that solves a problem. If our product doesn't solve any problem, then there's no value in it. Speed. How long, how often can we, how quick can we create the product? How long does it take? And the third one is the stability. The value of stability, which means you can translate it into as maintainability. If you can maintain the product, if you can add features, new features, functions, quality features, or everything quite quickly, then its value will be otherwise if not. The bad thing is that on the right side we have that we can have a lot of different kind of waste. I highlighted a few of one that is really characteristic for our software industry. As we know, we create a lot of unnecessary features in products. If you have ever used Word or Excel, you may know that 90% of the product features are not used, at least not used by all of them. A big thing is partially done work. This is the metaphor of the wheel by Toyota. It means that we have a lot of functions, we create a lot of functions, a lot of routines, a lot of program code that we don't use later. So that's an issue. And all of us know about waiting, errors and issues. And one of my favorite is the last one, even if it's not highlighted, unexploited productivity. When we have a lot of good guys, but we don't use their productivity. So let's deal with how we specify in a magic way. If you compare the two curves on this diagram, you can see that in the agile world, we don't over-specify what we have to do. And actually, it means that even if the cost of failure go up, they go up linearly and not exponentially. And that's the big difference between agile and traditional waterfall methodologies. There's another important concept, what we call it's the flow. And I can demonstrate this on the volume delivery diagram. Most of the time we have features, and features go through a pipeline, why they become product. If we had features with the same size, and if we had activities that took the same time, then we had something called 1P flow, which is like this. If we have a kind of feature, first we analyze it. Then we develop it. While we develop it, then we can analyze the second feature, and so on. When it's developed, then we can test and fix it. Then it waits for deployment and deliver, and so on. This 1P flow, this is the basics of the lean development. It's important because when we diagram it on a cumulative diagram, then we can see that on this way, from the fifth day, we have product increments, and on day 11, we have something like six ready product features. Most of the time, we cannot implement 1P flow. Why? Because we don't have the same size tasks. we don't have the same time for a certain kind of activity like development of analysis or anything else. So what we do, generally, we put some kind of weight into the line. For example, after analyzing two features, we can't put all of them to development because they have to wait while we have capacity for development. And the same is for testing. Even if we develop a certain kind of tasks, a certain kind of features, we have to wait while we can test them. And if we go on this way, we have something like this in a cumulative diagram. The big issue with this diagram is that you can see those silver or gray shades here, these empty areas, which are actually all wastes. The interesting thing on this diagram is that you can see that we don't have, after 11 days, even if we have the same size of task, with waiting, we don't have any items ready. Let's compare the two things. When we measure the lead flow, actually we have two ideas that we take into account. The first is the cycle time. The cycle time shows how much days or how much hours, how many hours does it take while a certain product features enter the pipeline and leaves the pipeline as a ready product feature. And we have another idea, work in progress, which shows at a certain point of time how many items do we have that are on the inventory, so we are working them but they are not ready. And if we compare this, you can see that the first case that when we don't have waiting, the cycle time is something like 4 days, and every day we have 4 items in the work in progress queue. What happens when we have the waiting? We don't know too much. What we can see only that the cycle time is somehow bigger than 9 days, and at a certain day, on day 10, we have 6 items in work in progress. If I want to translate it, it means that if we don't do it in the right way, we waste a lot of time for doing activities that don't lead to ready product features. Any questions, guys? Okay. I would like to tell you a few things about backlog-based development. This is a technique we can use for developing software in agile ways, even if we don't know any agile methodologies. Let's start with it. What's wrong with the specifications? Is there anyone who ever read or wrote a product specification or a software specification? Hands up, please. Do you know how many guys are reading these kinds of documents? Do they read it at all? Then how do they develop if they don't read the specification? So it's a difficult thing. At most of my customers, they do have specifications and they try to work according to the specification. And I think it's wrong and it's illegal. I'll show you why. Generally, when we have a business specification made by the analysis team, later, so that the implementation team, actually the developers and the testers can work, they generally translate it first to a system specification and then to a software design. The lean approach identifies information transforming as a kind of loss, as a kind of waste. When we create a business specification, a system specification from a business specification, and a software design from the system specification, actually we are producing waste. There are some other big issues with this approach. Besides the waste, we have difficulties with the team communication, and actually we have some kind of challenges. The first thing is that the inflexibility. The analysis team uses a certain language which is totally different than what an implementation team uses. The second thing is that actually testing a specification, it's pretty challenging, it's not easy. Developers know how to test code, but they don't know how to test specification. And there's a big issue. It takes time and it takes knowledge to get all the knowledge information for the development teams they want to use to develop the product. But the most difficult thing with specification is that it's pretty difficult to touch. If a development team wants to start development, they have a specification which says functional specification, UI specification, reliability, performance, and everything else. but it's difficult to start it. Where should I start? Should I choose the first function on page one, or should I deal with first with performance on page 229 or something like that? And what if those elements in the specification somehow I correlated? It's not easy to work with specification, and actually most of the time it doesn't work. What do you think if I have, let's say, a web-based system, which function is the first one that Java developers develop? Login. Do you think that login adds value to the system? Hands up, who knows that login adds value to the system? Then hands up who think that it does not add value to the system? And what about the others? Yeah. So actually login adds value to the system in most cases, because if we can't login, we can't use the system. Or if we don't have login, that all users' information is based, so it adds a value. But it doesn't mean that even if it adds value, we have to start with that requirement, because maybe there are product features that have much more value. For example, if I have an invoicing system, probably creating a new invoice or printing an invoice has much more value than login. So if I create a new system, probably I start with, let's say, printing invoices and not with creating invoices. Why do you think should I start with printing invoices? If I cannot print an invoice, then I cannot get the value or the money behind the invoice. So even if I can't create an invoice, but I can print one, it has a value for me. So that's kind of thinking that's behind agility. So that's why it's really difficult. So what I suggest to you, without doing any agile methodologies like Scrum, Extreme Programming, Kanban, or whatever, taking into account the following tactics. Let's assume that we are going to create a software system. This unit size cube is the work we have to do. If you want to make it as a one piece, it doesn't work. So what we do generally, we divide it to smaller parts. The smaller parts are really small. They are not the same size, they don't have the same volume, but at least we divide them into small pieces. Then, after we order them. We put them into a list where we try to put those who have the higher value at the top of the list, and those which don't have value or less value, or even we don't know the value, somewhere at the end. And we try to estimate their size relatively. So this is what I call the backlog, and this is what we are working with. And when solving and evaluating this kind of product features, actually we use time frames. The Scrum uses a concept called sprints, but we can simply use the idea of time frames. At certain time frames, which should be somewhere between 1 or 4 weeks and not longer, why shouldn't be longer? What do you think? Yeah, because we forget everything. And the other thing is, I just mentioned at the beginning that every 3 times there's something we call half period time. So it means that if we have longer sprint, something, if we have a sprint like 3 months, then it means that half of the requirements changes by the end. So actually we use small time frames, small prints, and we deliver something that we call potentially shippable product increment every time. Product increment means that if we create a new feature, we integrate this feature into the product. Okay, and Scrum does something else. At the end of every sprint, it evaluates how we went on to ensure the right quality and so on. And one thing is that even if we have those time frames, we don't release at the end of every time frame, but at certain time frame, we release the product to real production systems. Okay, so actually, the basic things in agility is very easy. Instead of doing a big amount of work with big teams for a long time, we create tiny work items. We use a small team and short time frames to create always volume, and we try to forget about waste. So that's why I think specification is evil. because in specification we are unable to use small groups, unable to create small work items, and unable to make them in a short time. What we do, and this is what I suggest to you, specifications are very important because they cover a lot of knowledge about the domain and the product. So let's keep it somewhere in the company, even if it's a small company or a big enterprise, into a knowledge base or something like it. Let the business competency team and the implementation competency team reach this domain knowledge, reach the specification. But instead of using this specification, let's create a backlog. Let's tear down the big work into smaller items. And let the development team, what I call implementation competency, use only this backlog. So don't let developers read the specification. Please ask business analyst or the Scrum framework has a role called product owner who creates a small backlog and use these items. Well, just let me illustrate with one example what a backlog item can be. Let's assume that we have to create some simple user management function for a software inventory system. Let's assume that we store two information about user. We store email address and we store name, and we use email address as an identifier or something like that. Most teams put something on their work list item, user management implementation, or implement user management or something like that. Agile teams do it a bit different. They put at least three items on the list. For example, first, let's create a user. The second item is, let allow the user update name or email address, or sometimes let the user allow their email address, let the user allow their name or something like that. And the third or fourth one, let's remove or let's delete one user. Why do they this? What do you think? They do this because these four items are small enough. And how they work? Of course, first they create the work item that allows you to create the user. It's an important thing because if I have a user, then I can go on with the user information and use it in other functions too. When they are about to create the functions for update the user's email address or update the user's email name, they are thinking, do we need this feature right now? Or maybe it's enough if I implement this feature only 4 weeks from now, because this is the time when I really need this feature for a certain other feature or something like that. And what about deleting a user? They think that, well, at the beginning, we are about collecting users, so maybe we don't want to delete them. Maybe we don't delete them at all, we just archive them. And by the way, deleting a user is not an easy thing because the user can have many, many references in the database, some things. So instead of undertaking that we are creating a big user management system, even if it does take something like 2 weeks, we actually divide those parts into smaller parts, and we are thinking about where to put it into the backlog. Okay? Let me show you one more things about the backlog and a very easy technique to use the backlog, and then I will conclude my presentation. So actually what we have, the product backlog, is an order list of things to do in order we can implement the product on the way we plan it. And the backlog is represented by this kind of figure because the size of the items is really different. Generally at the bottom of the backlog there are big items that should be divided into smaller tasks and so on. And that's a very important user voice from how we describe a user task. And it's like this. As a certain kind of stakeholder, I'd like to use a certain kind of feature, and one of the most important things, so that I can achieve a certain goal. And this is very important. What are the parts of the user story? Actually, there are three very important, I would say mandatory parts, and if you have them, then you know everything. The first is the definition. Who knows what and for what purpose? This what purpose is very, very important, because if we have this, then we can have the creativity, we can use the creativity of the software development teams. You may have heard about the urban legend that the NASA paid millions of dollars for a certain kind of ball pen that the astronauts can use to write down notes in the space, while the Russian astronauts still used pencils. Actually, it's just an urban legend, but it really demonstrates what the difference, because it tells you that NASA's engineers were enterprised to create something after a certain specification, and they got a specification about the portal or something like that. Instead, the NASA engineer could have the challenge, hey guys, the task we should solve is that actually we want to make in the space station, in the space node, want to make nodes in the space, and we want to get them back to Earth. So that's why it's very important that we always have to tell what the purpose of the user story is, not to uncut the developer creativity.
But I have to add to this. You have to know the full story. Because just having a thing you have to write down, the problem is the pen and the pencil. Given the fact that the pen doesn't have a graphite in it, which is very dangerous to have in the paste. And without having this small piece of information, yeah, you can say, yeah, well, you know, why the hell do we have to spend 2 million and write making a ball pen that works in the space? Well, you can use just a normal pencil from that. It's just a missing piece of information, and without having this, you know, it just changes the complete urban legend, which is in fact, you know, that's the real story. But just knowing small piece of information changes the complete project.
I'm almost totally agree with you. I don't know whether you have the comment or not. I tell you later. Yeah, you're right. The second thing is the acceptance criteria. We need this. No story can be complete without telling how I will check that this story is complete. Just returning back to the pencil and the pen ball, we have to verify that if we are making a pen ball, then our story is ready when we can use this pen ball in this way, and so and so and so and all. So this is the acceptance criteria. One very important thing, if you have something like 5, 6, 7 or more acceptance criteria, it's a sign that maybe the user story is too big. So generally, when you have acceptance criteria number between 2 or between 1 and 5, it shows you that maybe it's the right size. If it's more than 5, it shows you that maybe I should think about dividing into 2 or 3 more pieces. Okay. And one important thing, and that's maybe that makes the whole thing work, that we create test or demo scenarios. If a development team knows what the acceptance criteria is and how they can test it, during the whole implementation, they will follow this focus. Instead of just programming a function, they will know that, oh, when we will demo this function, this demo will consist this test, and this is how stakeholders will check that we are ready and we worked with the right and good quality or not. So guys, as I see, my time is over, or almost over. So I would like to shortly describe you a few takeaways, and I'm ready to accept your questions. So the first thing is, please always think when you work, what is value and what is waste. If you think something is illogical, it's not a value, it's a waste, then make it obvious and tell it to your product owner, tell it to your product manager. The second thing is small. Even if you have a big development team, try to divide it into small feature teams, whatever you want. Try to create as small work items as you can, and try to use small time frames, either sprints, whatever you call. And the third thing is, because you have teams and you depend on each other, always strengthen the inter-team communication, because without that you won't develop great software. So guys, thank you very much for you being here in my session. And if you have any questions, it's your right time. Please ask for the mic. Thank you. If you have no questions, then bon appetit. Enjoy your lunch. And you can find me wherever I'm in the conference. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.